Hello and welcome to another episode of Twimmel Talk, the podcast where I interview interesting people doing interesting things in machine learning and artificial intelligence. I'm your host, Sam Charrington. On today's show, I chat with Song Han, assistant professor in MIT's EECS department, about his research on deep gradient compression. In our conversation, Song and I explore the challenge of distributed training for deep neural networks and the idea of compressing the gradient exchange to allow it to be done more efficiently. Song details the evolution of distributed training systems based on this idea and provides a few examples of centralized and decentralized distributed training architectures, such as Uber's Horovod, as well as the approaches native to PyTorch and TensorFlow. Song also addresses potential issues that arise when considering distributed training, such as loss of accuracy and generalizability, and much more. A couple of quick notes before we jump in. First, our next monthly meetup is taking place on Tuesday, June 12th. Cardiologist-level arrhythmia detection with convolutional neural networks, which is work by researchers in Andrew Ng's lab at Stanford. For more information on the meetup, visit twimmelai.com/meetup. Next, I've also posted some updated information about our fast.ai study group, which starts this week. We've had nearly 300 people sign up to do this together, and the Slack group has been buzzing. To learn more, visit twimmelai.com/fastai. All right, let's do it. All right, everyone, I am on the line with Song Han. Song is going to be starting in July 2018 as an assistant professor in the EECS department at MIT and recently received his PhD in EE from Stanford University. Song, welcome to This Week in Machine Learning and AI.
My absolute pleasure. Glad to be here to join this podcast.
Absolutely. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you got interested in machine learning and AI.
Oh, okay, of course. So I recently graduated from Stanford University, advised by Professor Bill Daly. So initially, I was doing hardware architecture research. In my PhD, when I started my project, my initial goal was to build specialized hardware accelerators to accelerate different applications. Since the semiconductor industry has moved from single core, multi core, now is the era of domain specific accelerators. And then when I started my PhD in 2012, that's exactly when AlexNet came. And then ImageNet accuracy is just booming up. So feel like that's a great opportunity to explore domain-specific architectures to accelerate for deep learning, and particularly deep neural networks, which used to be pretty slow and takes a lot of computation, lots of memory. And I feel it's a perfect alignment between my previous expertise in computer architecture and also given the rapid progress of deep learning to bridge the gap between machine learning and computer systems. So that's how I got into this area.
Fantastic. So you've done some work around FPGAs, but also beyond the silicon accelerators to distributed machine learning. Is that right?
Right, exactly. So in my PhD thesis, I focused most on inference. So focused on most on inference, building specialized architectures for inference, and then prototype it on FPGA due to the low budget of actually taking out a chip. And most recently, I've been working on not only inference, but also training, since training large-scale deep neural nets take days or even weeks, which greatly limits the productivity of machine learning researchers. That's why I look into training to improve the efficiency of training as well.
And the technique that you've written about recently is one called deep gradient compression. Tell us a little bit about the motivation for that research.
So deep gradient compression is a technique to compress the gradient exchange for distributed training. So why do we need distributed training? We want to have more parallelism so that we can try to finish the training in a shorter time. Say previously, we train ImageNet, it takes about a week. recently there's work from, for example, Facebook, training ImageNet in 1 hour. So increasing the parallelism will decrease the training time. We can, through more GPUs and more computation, to decrease the time for compute. But there is another factor that determines how much time it needs to train a neural network. That is communication. Since the more node you have, the more communication you want to have, because different nodes, they have to exchange their gradients during distributed training, which will limit the scalability of distributed training. Scalability means with, say, with 64 node compared with one node, you ideally want to have 64x speed up compared with using just one node. But usually, due to the bottleneck of communication or networking, it's hard to achieve 64x speed up. Some previous work has achieved super great scalability. For example, Uber's framework called PowerBot, and also PyTorch. And so, but usually that require a great networking infrastructure. For example, InfiniBand or 40 gigabit Ethernet. But I was motivated by how can we enable such kind of distributed training with cheap commodity networking infrastructure. For example, on AWS, on Amazon and AWS, for example, they have a 1 gigabit Ethernet, but still we want to benefit millions of machine learning practitioners who cannot afford those super expensive dedicated networking infrastructure that Facebook researchers or Google researchers can use. So that motivates me to kind of democratize AI training, even on such commodity hardware. Yeah, that motivates me to work on this deep gradient compression.
Okay. Can we take a step back and maybe have you walk through on the compute side when we're trying to distribute training, what the different elements of distributed training are? So you talked about, you know, the need to share gradients. Where does that come from?
So let's back up to talk about where the gradients come from. So training deep neural nets is using a basic algorithm called gradient descent or stochastic gradient descent most recently. So it's calculating the first order derivative of the weights. So first of all, it's using a convex optimization method to solve a large non-convex problem, which require us to get the first order gradient for each weight. So think about it as this. So we are climbing down a hill, for example, which is very similar to do an optimization problem. So you have 360 degrees and you want to choose which direction would you go in order to climb down the hill, right? So a fastest way to go down the hill is to follow the direction that is steepest, right? That is an analogy of the gradient. The gradient is very analogy to the finding which direction is the steepest. And then you follow the steepest path. At each step, you follow the steepest step, and then you will go to the bottom of the valley, right? So that is for a single node. And when you have multiple nodes, each node will have a bunch of training images. Say we have four different nodes, and each one is finding their own direction, climbing or going down the hill. And then how do you merge them together? So they need to communicate and exchange this gradient through networking. And exchanging the gradient can be pretty bulky. Say AlexNet, it has 240 megabytes of weights, and so it is also 240 megabytes of gradient. For example, ResNet 50, it has 100 megabytes. So every iteration, you have to, different nodes have to exchange 100 megabytes of gradient to each other, which makes it a bottleneck for the networking infrastructure.
And so does every node need to know all of the gradients that the other nodes have worked on? Is this for to update its own weights?
Yes, for synchronized training, it is required. And that's exactly why it requires so much networking bandwidth. since each node in synchronized distributed training, each node has to have all the gradient information for its neighboring nodes.
How is the work distributed among the various nodes that are working on a problem? Is it there? Are they each given batches, for example, to work on, or is there some other? Is the gradients distributed randomly, or does that matter at all?
Oh, that's a good question. So there are usually two ways of achieving such parallelism. One is data parallelism. The other is model parallelism. So data parallelism is having different chunks of training data to different nodes. And model parallelism is having different chunk of the model across different nodes. Data parallelism is a lot easier to implement than model parallelism. So in this case, I'm talking about data parallelism. And in specific, how data parallelism is achieved is by we have the same model on sitting on each node, on each training node, the same model. Model can be a convolution neural net or recurrent neural net. And then we feed different chunks of training data to each node. Say the first node may have a batch of image 0 through 31, and then node 2 may have image 32 through 63, etc. So all the nodes are sharing the same model, but they are being fed with different chunks of training data. And they calculate their local gradients according to their own piece of data. And then they exchange the gradient to each other. So it can be implemented in two ways. One is parameter server, the other is R-reduce. R-reduce is simpler, so I will talk about that. So R-reduce is by every node, after calculating their own gradient, it takes the gradient from all the other nodes. And in the meantime, it will also send its own gradient to all the other nodes. So everyone receives everyone's all the gradient, and then sum it up, and then calculate an average.
What's the architecture for doing this? From an implementation perspective, I can imagine a number of ways of doing this, putting them in some kind of shared storage and having all of the distributed workers pull from that shared storage, or using some kind of message passing architecture. Is that something that you've explored, the different ways that one could do this?
Yeah, there are in general two ways to do this. The first one is using a parameter server, which is a centralized arbiter. You can think of it in that way. So everyone will send, all the training node will send their local gradients to the parameter server. And the parameter server, by the name, we know it's storing the parameters, it's storing the model. So it receives all the gradient from different node, and then sum it up and add it to the centralized parameter server, and then update the model, and then it broadcasts the model to all the training node. So for example, if you have four training node, all the four node will send their own gradient to the centralized parameter server, do one update, and then the parameter server will broadcast the updated weight to all the training node. And then all the training node starting another iteration of gradient calculation. So it forms a cycle. So that's the first way, using a parameter server. And there's a second way, using a decentralized way. So the parameter server is a centralized way, right? You have a centralized parameter server. What about a decentralized way? So decentralized way, we usually use this all reduce operation. So for example, you have 1, 2, 3, 4 training node. And then still you have a master training node, for example, node 1. And then all the node will send their own gradient to node 1. For example, node 2 send it to node 1. Node 4 send it to node 3. Node 3 send it to node 1. So in the end, node 1 will have the gradient information for all the node. And the next step is node 1 will broadcast updated model to node 2, 3, and 4. So node 1 will first broadcast it to node 3, and then node 1 will broadcast to node 2, and node 3 will broadcast to node 4. So in this tree structure, everyone can get everyone's grading information and update. So this is just one basic implementation using a tree structure. There is a more advanced implementation with using a butterfly structure.
Is it butterfly?
Yes, butterfly.
Okay.
Everyone send a portion of them to the neighboring. So the idea is still everyone should get everyone's gradient, but in that way, it's more efficient than a tree structure. So in summary, there are two ways, centralized way using parameter server and a decentralized way using this all-reduce operation.
Circling back to to your work in particular around deep gradient compression, what you're trying to do is reduce the communication overhead of this last step that we've just been talking about. How do you do that?
So the basic idea is to reduce the necessary amount of gradient that we need to send. So surprisingly, we find only 0.1%, only 0.1% of the gradient that is really needed to be sent out over the network. So the other 99.9%, you can hold it locally. You don't have to send it out.
By 0.1% is the idea that, you know, when we talk about these gradients, we're talking about vectors that need to be moved around. Is the idea that these vectors are very sparse, that they're mostly consist of zeros, and you're, you know, using a lot of your time and effort moving around these zeros essentially that aren't adding information?
Right. That's the key idea. Although initially without any treatment, they are not sparse. Although some of the gradients are super small, they are not zero, but they are small. So the way we deal with it is to sort the gradient and zero away all those 99.9%, the smallest, and then only send out those 0.1%, the largest gradient over the network. But simply, naively doing this only by such kind of thresholding and making a dense gradient vector to make it sparse will hurt the prediction accuracy. So we found those small gradients, although some of them may be noise, but if we don't send it out, it will hurt the accuracy. So what we do is to locally accumulate those small gradients for more iterations until it gets large. When it gets large enough, then we send it out. So in this way, we can recover a lot of accuracy.
Oh, interesting. So the idea there is that you've got your training across, you know, some number of nodes, say 10 nodes. You've got each of these nodes is exchanging gradient information via one of the couple of ways that we've talked about. You found that most of that gradient information isn't useful. But it sounds like the key insight is that it may be useful in the future as that node continues to train. So you don't want to just kind of throw it all away, you know, at each training iteration. You want to continue to accumulate the other 99% of the, or 99.9% of the gradient information over time. So, you find that some of that becomes useful later on.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly the idea. So another way to, that's one interpretation. Another way, a mathematical way to interpret that is to increase the equivalent batch size of the gradient. For example, rather than calculate the gradient and immediately send it out and do the update, we accumulate them locally for another iteration, maybe for a third iteration, until it reaches a threshold. It's equivalent, say you use three iterations, then it's equivalent to increasing the batch size, almost equivalent, since the weight has changed a little bit, almost equivalent to increase the batch size by 3 times. That's another intuitive way to understand this. Mm-hmm.
But it strikes me that that's a little different in the sense that in the initial way you described it, you know, because you're always sorting and thresholding on the communication, but not on the internal state of a node, the information in a particular part of the gradient could stay around for forever, for, you know, much more than three iterations or three batch iterations.
It's highly possible you accumulated very long, even more than three iterations. Say it can be 10 iterations or 20 iterations.
Right.
But you don't send it out until it reaches top 0.1% of the total gradient, magnitude of the gradient.
So how do you reconcile that with the batch interpretation that you just mentioned?
So that piece of gradient isn't sent out. It didn't do the update. It's just you calculate it and then accumulate across batches. You just accumulate the batches. So if you exchange the summation, you are doing such calculation across T iterations. So it's if you put the T in the learning rate and also put a T in the denominator, it's equal with increasing the learning rate by T times and also increase the batch size by T times.
Okay. So this batch interpretation is more reflective of what's happening at the system level than what's happening at an individual node. Is that fair?
That's a fair interpretation.
Mm. Okay.
Although it's not 100% mathematically equal, so each iteration, the weight gets changed.
Right.
So it's using different weight for different iteration in real case.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's not that's a key idea, but that's not the only idea to recover the accuracy. So, for example, on image classification, just with this local gradient accumulation, we still suffered from 1.6% loss of accuracy. And on language modeling, we suffered 3.3-point loss of accuracy. So we were thinking, how do we, it's pretty close, like 1%, 3%, but it's not perfect.
For context, what kind of loss of accuracy did you see with a more naive approach to gradient compression? Were you just thresholding?
Purest thresholding and not doing them accumulating locally doesn't converge on either image classification problem or the speech recognition. So it doesn't converge.
It just doesn't work.
No, it just doesn't work.
Okay.
But even so, we added local gradient accumulation and then it converges. And on Cypher 10, RESA 110, the original baseline accuracy is 92.9. Now it's 91.36. It's pretty close. And now let's see how can we further close the gap.
Is there any loss of accuracy in moving to distributed training at all? Or are we able to, you know, fully capture the accuracy of a single node solution, you know, in distributed training?
Unless using super large batch size, and people have already shown using large batch size nowadays can converge really well. So it's almost a consensus that using a distributed training compared with a single node training, we can get very comparable accuracy. Although generalization ability is still under discussion, but the accuracy nowadays is almost solved the problem of distributed training. Using multiple nodes can achieve the same accuracy as using the same node.
What does that mean? Why would generalization be different between single node and multi-node training?
That is an unsolved problem. Why using large batch size, the generalization ability from one training data set into another data set can't be the same. So that is an unsolved problem to interpret why about the generalization ability using large batch training.
But it's the generalization challenge with distributed training isn't so much relative to single node versus distributed. It's more because in order to do distributed, you increase the batch size, then you introduce this issue around generalization.
Right. And it is only when the batch size is usually too super large, say more than, say, 8K or even more, then this problem begins to appear.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's an orthogonal to this problem of decreasing the networking bandwidth.
Okay.
So shall we go back to
Please.
The discussion? Okay, great. So how do we recover those 1%, 3% loss of accuracy? We find we need, so momentum SGD is usually dominant in current deep neural network training. We are not using the vanilla, the naive SGD, but we are using the momentum, which means we are using part of the previous gradient together with the current gradient. We do a weighted average, having a discounting factor to avoid the noise. So say we are seeing, well, okay, we are going down the hill, we should go this direction, is the steepest, but we don't go directly with this direction, but it's a sum of part of the previous gradient, part of the previous direction we have already gone through, and together with the current gradient. So that's called momentum.
Okay.
And with momentum, we are adding summing up the previous gradient with the current gradient, which give a new vector called velocity. And we are multiplying the velocity with the learning rate, then subtract it from the original weight. And in this case, we found we should do local accumulation of the velocity rather than local accumulation of the gradient. So accumulate the velocity, not the gradient.
Are you using momentum and the velocities throughout, or are you uniquely using the velocities in the accumulation but using vanilla gradient descent in when you're doing the distributed part?
We are using not the vanilla gradient descent, but momentum gradient descent. Gradient descent with momentum.
And okay.
With that, we used just because there's a momentum term in the gradient descent, we need to accumulate the velocity rather than the gradient.
Okay, got it.
Right. And with this technique, there's a mathematical proof in the paper why we need to accumulate the velocity rather than the gradient. But you can feel free to check out the paper to read the math. But here, just a very intuitive way to understand this is to take into account of the previous gradient, the momentum term, so that we need to accumulate the final summation of the gradient and the previous gradient. So we accumulate the velocity rather than the gradient. And with this method, we found the previous 1.5% loss of accuracy now is only 0.36% on image classification, which is closer, but still is not the way we want. Still have 0.3% loss of accuracy. But for speech recognition, surprisingly, we found after using this momentum correction, it didn't converge. So there are still some problem we need to solve. So shall we move on to the third technique?
Sure, please.
To recover the accuracy? Okay, good. Okay, so why particularly for speech recognition, the accuracy even didn't converge using this advanced method? Because the gradient managing problem. So previously, those OSTMs and RNNs, we are having this technique called gradient clipping after doing the summing up the gradient for all the node to prevent from gradient explosion. Since OSTM has back propagation through time, it's very easy to suffer from either gradient vanishing or gradient explosion.
Mm-hmm.
And now we are doing the clipping. So the denominator will be the square root of the summation of the sum of the sparse velocity from all the node. So we found we need to exchange the sequence of sparsification and gradient clipping. We need to move the clip. So previously, do the pruning first, sparsification first, and then do the summation, and then do the clipping. Now, what we need to do is do the sparsification and do local gradient clipping, and then sum it up. So we exchange the sequence from between clipping and summation. And in this way, each gradient, even before they get summed up, they are clipped to the max value. So it's very unlikely to suffer from local gradient, suffer from the gradient explosion problem. And with this technique, the LSTM for speech recognition finally converged, and the accuracy loss becomes 2% compared with previously 3%.
Did you then go back and apply that method to the computer vision problem?
Yes, computer vision problem. Now for computer vision problem is, so gradient explosion is a particular problem for LSTM.
Right.
It's not a problem, not usually a problem for used in computer vision tasks, convolution neural nets.
Mm-hmm.
And convolution neural nets already has a very close accuracy. It's only 0.36 percent loss of accuracy. So that's not a problem.
Right. I was thinking of it more from the perspective of, you know, are you moving towards a single approach that you can apply to, you know, both of these types of problems, or are you, you know, do you fork it? Do you determine which problem and then you apply what we previously talked about for computer vision, and then you make some tweaks for the LSTM RNN type of example?
I would say it's a very general, since for CNNs, there are not much bells and whistles. For example, there's gradient clipping is not needed for convolution neural nets. But this is really the inherently the way we deal with LSTM. People usually have used this gradient clipping. Then for gradient compression, we also need to apply corresponding techniques.
Okay.
So it's not the new trouble people have to deal with. It's all the trouble people have to deal with, the gradient explosion problem for LSTM. And then during gradient compression, we also have to take care of that problem. Right.
So just a slight tweak to the way you handled that problem previously.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, so we are very close to success. Only 0.36 loss of accuracy on computer vision and 2.16 loss of accuracy on speech recognition. Now we solve this problem. So we found, as we mentioned, those accumulating the velocity will take a long time, say 10 iterations, 20 iterations, even 100 iterations. So we did this profiling of exactly how many iterations are those accumulation happens. And we found it has a really long tail. Some of the velocity gets accumulated and broadcasted after 2,000 iterations. So you are 2,000 iterations ahead of time. Now you apply this gradient, which is so obsolete. Then we found it's very necessary to cut or to mask away these kind of obsolete velocity terms. Just like a student, if he didn't turn in his homework for 1 week, then it's probably fine. But if he didn't turn in the homework for a whole semester, then just fail him rather than continue giving him the chance and interpreting and disturbing other his deskmate, for example.
Mm.
So by this momentum factor masking, we moved the loss of accuracy from 0.3% to 0.1% in vision, and for speech recognition, it's from 2% to 0.5%.
How do you do that in practice? You know, I guess the way I'm interpreting this is you've got this, you're trying to get rid of contributions in a current time step from a momentum, a velocity vector, you know, that's too old. But you're, as I understand it, you're not really keeping around that much state. It's just kind of continual accumulation. How do you identify and get rid of the older velocity vectors?
So the question is, how do we keep track how long, say, a student haven't turned in his homework, and how old this how old this stillness becomes.
Right.
I forgot the detailed implementation about the tracking. Maybe you can turn to the paper to see our details, trying to keep track of how stale it is. Yeah, that's something okay. I need to turn into the paper for that detail.
But it sounds like then you are introducing some new kind of bookkeeping scheme to keep track of this. It's not something that falls out of the prior implementation very easily.
Probably need some counter locally to count that.
Okay. And so the impression that I'm getting with this method is that, you know, it requires a lot of manual kind of massaging of the way that you might otherwise implement your training. Is that the case? Or, you know, is it possible to, for example, to generically re-implement some libraries in like a TensorFlow or something like that that would automatically do this for you?
Oh, let me close up the last technique and then we talk about that question. I think that's a good question. Yeah, so we want to close the last small gap of 0.1% loss of accuracy. And we found that the technique to deal with that is by warm-up training. So in the first 1% of the training, we don't use 99.9% of sparsity, but we use we use 75 and then 95 and then exponentially increase sparsity in the first couple of epochs until it reaches 99.9%. And then in this way, we saw the accuracy actually improved by 0.4% on image classification and then improved by 0.4% on speech recognition. So that closes the whole story that we can fully recover the accuracy.
Sorry, what was on the computer vision? Where did you end up? I thought we were at 0.36 before.
Previously, we were losing 0.36.
Okay.
Point accuracy. Now we are better. We are having a better accuracy by 0.37%.
Oh, wow.
Than the baseline.
Okay.
Yeah, even better than the baseline. And similar for speech recognition, even better than the baseline.
Is this advantage of warm-up training independent of the total number of training iterations? In other words, intuitively for me, I get that that kind of backing off over time, the amount of information you're, you know, throwing away, so to speak, would accelerate training. But part of me thinks that, you know, if you let training go on long enough, you'd eventually make that up, and there wouldn't be this big difference, you know, offered by warm-up training.
Oh, that's not completely what I meant. So warm-up training, so first of all, we are using the same amount of training iterations, Warm-up training is just saying for the first 1% of the training epochs, first 1% of the training epoch, we have less sparsity in that part.
Right.
But
right.
Still, we are having the same amount of iterations. We are not increasing the number of epochs.
I understand. I guess the question was, if you could achieve the same level of accuracy with more training iterations as opposed to using warm-up training. In other words, my intuition at least is that the warm-up training would, you know, accelerate convergence, but not necessarily get you better accuracy. It just makes it take less time because you're starting with more data.
The reason we use warm-up is due to the first couple of epochs. We need to allow those drastic changes of the gradient, which is everything has a lot of noise. We should encourage those noise.
Right.
But in the end, it's getting more and more stable. We don't need those kind of noise. And naively, just increasing the number of training epochs, it just begins to fluctuate. The accuracy begins to fluctuate in the later epochs, not necessarily increasing the accuracy.
Okay, interesting.
So that's why we need in the first couple of epochs to allow a dramatic disturbance of the weight of the gradient.
Okay. So presumably you're starting with some kind of randomized weights. So this is a way to kind of flush out those randomized weights a lot more quickly, in a sense.
Right. Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. And then, so now we have covered everything. We can go back to your previous question about how about the knobs we need to tune? It require lots of tuning, lots of knob tuning. So all the techniques we discovered, these different techniques, are due to original method require such, for example, momentum SGD. Have another term of momentum, then we have a recipe to deal with that. If you don't have momentum, then just accumulate the gradient. Now we accumulate the velocity. And then recurrent neural nets has this local gradient clipping, which is not due to us, but every people just use gradient clipping for recurrent neural nets. So correspondingly, we find our counterpart to make it compatible with gradient clipping. Then that's another technique. And then for warm-up training, similar, that's a common sense that during the first couple of iterations, either you use large batch training, you all need to allow a certain warm-up of the gradient. So we find just 1% of the training epoch works pretty well for different tasks. So no, don't need to tune the warm-up period. Just give it 1% of the time, make it have exponentially growth of the sparsity until 99.9%. That works pretty well. So all these knobs and tricks are based on the original requirements of original different techniques requirement.
The networks that you used for this, did you, presumably you kind of handcrafted these, you know, these tricks required for distributed use. Do you envision or plan to create standard implementations of this, or have you already done that?
Oh, suddenly, please allow me to suddenly jump to your previous question. I suddenly remembered how I implemented the gradient masking. Remember, you mentioned you have to do the bookkeeping, right?
Right.
So no, we periodically clean up all the gradient local velocities. So no matter who delayed by how many iterations, just clear up everything.
Ah, okay.
Just like
that makes
sense. There's no bookkeeping required. Just like every year we have two semesters, right? One is in winter, one is in summer, and if you don't turn in your homework by summer, then you fail. Similarly for winter.
Any of your future MIT students might be getting a little scared listening to this podcast and how often you're talking about failing them.
just an example, hopefully to help. I usually use this kind of fun analogy, but I'm usually pretty nice to students. Actually, the student that's doing this work will, I made him an offer to MIT. The collaborator we worked on this project, his name is Yujun Lin, undergrad from Tsinghua University. We worked together last summer. And I made him an offer to MIT and also got him a fellowship. I'm usually pretty nice to students.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah.
Great. So I think we're coming up to the end of our time. Is there any other elements of this that you'd like to talk about?
Yeah. Just now you were mentioning whether to bring up to a standard implementation. And I'm really looking forward to collaborate with other researchers or companies to bring it to standardize this framework, say in Amazon EC2 or in Google Cloud or NVIDIA Cloud. That will be something to benefit, help democratize deep learning training in commodity hardware. So by compute, not networking. And actually, for example, I feel there are a few candidates, for example, in HoloRobot, distributed training framework done by Uber. That's a very good thing to start with. And if any students or any researchers are interested in exploring this, I'm happy to collaborate to work together on this direction, and in general on this kind of improving the efficiency of large-scale distributed training to make it more scalable. And by the end of this talk, I would like to give a small advertisement of my future lab, if you allow.
Absolutely.
At MIT. So I will be funding the Hans Lab. So Han is my last name, and I also represent my research. So H stands for high performance, high energy efficiency hardware. So lots of hardware research going on in my lab. And A stands for architectures and accelerators for artificial intelligence. So architecture means both the computer architecture and the neural network architecture. How do we design those smart, compact models that have the same accuracy for deep learning, for example? And N stands for novel algorithms for neural networks and deep learning. And S stands for small machine learning models. How do we compress the models? How do we compress the gradients? Make it less memory footprint, less computation, more efficient, and also scalable systems. So how do we make deep learning large-scale training more scalable with linear speedup? That's the goal. So that's the vision, or that's the mission of Han's lab at MIT. And hope we can have more collaborators in the future. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, it sounds like you've got some really exciting things planned, and I'm looking forward to touching base sometime in the future to check in on what you've been up to.
Oh, definitely. That'll be great.
Awesome. Thanks, Song.
All right. Thank you.
All right, everyone. That's our show for today. For more information on Song or any of the topics covered in this episode, head on over to twimlai.com/talk/146. If you're a Meetup member, keep an eye on your inbox for some updates on all we've got going on with that program. Thanks so much for listening, and catch you next time.